Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, May 29, 2024. Other South Sudanese opposition groups who are sitting on the fence say the holdout rebel groups negotiating in Nairobi have surrendered to President Salva Kiir.
You don't surrender by articulating that the country is in serious national crisis, actually being gripped by multiple crises. You are not surrendering if you say you need an inclusive process. You're not surrendering if you say there is something seriously wrong with South Sudan and we must fix it.
And more aerial pictures show destruction in Sudan's conflict.
We're often seeing some villages that might have been standing one day or 1 month, and the next day they're not there anymore. They've been burned down and there's clear markings to identify that. Sometimes we even catch them on fire as well.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Investigators using satellite imagery to document the war in Western Sudan's Darfur region say 72 villages were burned down in April, the most they have seen since the conflict began. Henry Wilkins talks to the people who do this research about how so-called open source investigation could be crucial in holding those responsible for the violence to account.
In London, open source investigators use publicly available information, often from the internet, to find evidence of villages being burned thousands of kilometres away in the war-torn Darfur region of Sudan. Ben Strick is the director of investigations for the Centre for Information Resilience, a non-profit that documents the conflict through a project called Sudan Witness. Sudan Witness says that 72 settlements were burned down in April 2024, the most it has seen in any month since the war began in April 2023.
We're often seeing some villages that might have been standing one day or 1 month, and the next day they're not there anymore. They've been burned down and there's clear markings to identify that. Sometimes we even catch them on fire as well. At some points, we're even lucky enough to see footage, and often that footage is filmed by the perpetrators themselves who are in the village cheering as they burn down these villages and often kill people at the same time.
Strick says the team has been able to identify some of the commanders who ordered the burning of settlements from these videos. It's all but impossible to verify the attacks documented by Sudan Witness on the ground, due to security concerns and warring factions' restrictions on media and human rights monitors entering Sudan. Human rights lawyers say that regardless of the difficulties in getting first-hand testimony, the international community needs to do more to stop the violence perpetrated against Sudanese civilians, even as the wars in Gaza and Ukraine dominate the headlines. Yona Diamond is senior legal counsel at the Raoul Wallenberg Center for Human Rights.
The amount of outrage, rightful outrage elsewhere in the world, can also be directed at Sudan, and the appropriate resources directed to protect and end the violence.
Strick says open source investigators will play a crucial role in holding the perpetrators of violence against civilians to account in the future. He says that open source investigation is also important in disproving propaganda.
There are certain elements claiming that they are condoning or that they stand against human rights abuses. However, some of the information that we're digging out shows contrary. And this is really useful because we're able to show the evidence, not just tell it. And that's really important in a space of propaganda and disinformation.
Non-profits have blamed the paramilitary rapid support forces and associated ethnic Arab militias for carrying out ethnic cleansing and attacks, including the burning of villages, against non-Arab communities in Darfur. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Yeah, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with General Mohammed Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, head of the Sudan Armed Forces, via phone today. The U.S. State Department reports that Secretary Blinken and General Burhan discussed the need to urgently end conflict in Sudan and enable unhindered humanitarian access, including cross-border and cross-line, to alleviate suffering of the Sudanese people. Blinken also discussed the resumption of negotiations in the Jeddah platform and the need to protect civilians and de-escalate hostilities in El Fasher, North Darfur. Still on conflict issues, South Sudan's Vice President for Service Cluster, Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, called on the parties negotiating in Nairobi to talk in good faith and end their long-standing differences. But some opposition groups who were not invited to the talks say the holdout rebel groups who are negotiating in Nairobi have surrendered to President Salva Kiir. Pagan Amum, leader of the Real SPLM, says the negotiations is about finding an end to South Sudan's vicious cycles of violence.
We received the message of Mama Rebecca very well, and we promised her that we do everything as opposition in our capacity. We leave no stone unturned until we achieve peace. If the government delegation is ready to travel with us in the right direction.
The people in South Sudan have been asking several questions, and I will give you one of the questions. Is this the renegotiation of the 2018 peace agreement?
This is an opportunity availed to us by President William Ruto. We consider this as an opportunity, probably the last opportunity to rescue South Sudan from the imminent collapse into total chaos and disintegration. We came here and put forward that to achieve a permanent peace in South Sudan, we need to address the root causes. Secondly, for such a process to achieve peace, it has to be inclusive. And thirdly, addressing the root causes should also lead to adopting a very clear new social contract to define what type of a state South Sudanese want to have, and also to articulate very clearly what type of a nation we want to be after our independence.
Some quarters of South Sudanese, those who are still sitting on the fence, have already categorized and labeled Soma as people who have surrendered to President Salva Kiir. How do you react to that?
You mean Soma who are here in Nairobi?
Correct. They are saying those who are negotiating in Nairobi are negotiating for their surrender.
No, and time will tell. You don't surrender by calling for the need to address the root causes. You don't surrender by articulating that the country is in serious national crisis, actually being gripped by multiple crises. You are not surrendering if you say you need an inclusive process. You're not surrendering if you say there is something seriously wrong with South Sudan and we must fix it. And you don't surrender if you are putting the real issues on the table.
The government of South Sudan has been on record several times that they are implementing the peace agreement and they are on the right track. The holdout groups are saying, no, the peace agreement is not being implemented. How is that impacting on the current ongoing negotiations in Nairobi?
That is a position we articulated very clearly, not only that the RRCs is not being implemented. We are saying that all agreements signed are not implemented. They are dishonored. And therefore, we need to find a new path of first Sudanese to come together. We propose a round table. The government rejected that. And we are still discussing how to achieve that inclusive political get together of all South Sudanese stakeholders to address the root causes and also agree on what type of South Sudan they want as a people. And that is what we are discussing here. Now, we believe that Our colleagues in SOMA, who for good reason decided not to participate in this process, we call on them to join this process because it is where we can raise all these issues and come and negotiate with the government for us to rescue our country.
A lot of South Sudanese have been picked from Kenya and thrown into jails in South Sudan. They gave example of the former spokesperson of Riek Machar. They gave example of Agri Idri and Samuel Dong, who disappeared from Nairobi. And the UN panel of experts issued a report that they were killed by the national security in Juba. And they gave other examples. How is security during these talks in Nairobi?
The issue of security and the fact that many South Sudanese were kidnapped and or abducted from Kenya and disappeared in South Sudan or killed. This is absolutely true. It has happened and everybody knows about it. And we have raised it also with the government of Kenya that this is a legitimate concern that needs to be discussed. The opposition definitely need to feel secure if we are to come to Kenya to negotiate. And secondly, also, the opposition also raised the issue of whether the government of Kenya, especially now they are asked by the president of South Sudan to mediate, the opposition also wanted to be sure that the government of Kenya will be neutral.
Let me move along that line on the issues of security. There are rumor mongers or people who are misinforming South Sudanese about what is going on in Nairobi. I saw a wild claim of food poisoning, that some of you were poisoned, which I don't buy, but you're on the ground. I am not there. So I need to verify some of these things from you.
No, this is not true. At least I read an information circulating in social media saying that this morning there was food poisoning. This is not true. I check around with all our delegation. We are okay, all of us. And I did not hear anything about the government. But I'm sure nothing like that really happened here.
Yeah, both the government and the opposition holdout groups who are currently in Nairobi sound and look like they are serious. This is happening in the backdrop of elections in December. How are you going to be part of this process, the election in December?
First of all, these elections is a joke, is a bad joke, actually. If these elections are held, they will lead to a massive violence and conflict in South Sudan, probably even to a genocide that has never happened before, that Africa has never witnessed. This is how I see it, because these elections, the way it is being designed by the SPLM-IG, are meant to steal legitimacy from the people of South Sudan through an election which will never be free or fair, an election that is not based on the constitution as they had agreed in the RRCs itself, an election being done without voter registration, without census conducted, without constituency demarcated, without freedoms, without a political space conducive to elections, without even having reconciled the people after all the wounds inflicted on South Sudanese. How can you go for elections in such a situation when the nation is divided?
That's Pagana Mum, leader of the Real SPLM. He spoke with me via WhatsApp from the venue of the peace talks in Nairobi earlier today. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Africans went to the polls today. Find out how they feel after the break.
Hey. Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our word of wisdom for today comes from Central Equatoria State.
I'm Robert Wane from South Sudan in capital Juba. My proverb is in Bari language, which says, Lele ngutu bain logon jijukin nyokunje kingajin kanyet itolipudian madikonje gokonan tukorean kode tumatan. In English, which says, no one can reverse his or her age to childhood, no matter what wealth or position he or she may have. Thank you so much.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. This is the seventh general election South Africa has held since the end of white minority rule 30 years ago. A record 27.79 million people are registered to vote, the highest number to date. That's according to the Independent Electoral Commission. Reporter Darren Taylor went out and about visiting polling stations earlier today, and my colleague Yahya Swihub asked him about the general mood and how things are progressing on the election day.
It's been peaceful so far, relatively few problems that I've come across. There have been a few delays at some voting stations around the country, like scanners not working, very long queues, meaning the officials take so much longer to process everyone. There's also been a fair amount of confusion in some places about the three ballot papers. Now, South Africans are used to voting by means of two ballot papers, one for national, which is basically the president, and one for the provincial government. But this time around, which also reflects the great excitement around this election, is that there's a third ballot paper, and now that contains 70 political parties. That's where people are able to vote for independent candidates to represent them in parliament. I've wandered around a few polling stations in Johannesburg and surrounding townships, speaking to people. And what's really struck me is the excitement which I last witnessed in 1994, which was South Africa's first historic multiracial election. Now, while I don't think that any South African election will ever compare with that very first democratic vote, there's certainly a lot of hype around this one. That, of course, revolves around the possibility that the African National Congress, the ANC, could fall below 50% for the first time and lose its majority in parliament.
Polling can be challenging in South Africa, but most analysts believe, just like you said, that the ANC faces its stiffest challenge yet, with a population deeply frustrated by the country's direction.
Certainly many people I spoke with didn't have good things to say about the ANC. A lot of people blame it for corruption, mass unemployment, crime, electricity blackouts, and other service delivery problems. The ANC, of course, has acknowledged that it's made mistakes, but, you know, it doesn't really speak directly a lot of the time to these issues. What struck me, though, is that many voters don't seem to feel at home with any particular party at this point in time other than the ANC. More than a few voters told me they continue supporting the ANC despite the party's failures, simply because they've always felt like it's their home. They still consider it to be the party of Nelson Mandela, and to vote for any other party would, in effect, be a betrayal of the anti-apartheid liberation struggle.
What if the support for the ANC drops below 50%? Will they be forced to enter into a coalition government?
Well, yes, that will force them to enter into a coalition government, definitely. If they fall just below 50%, I'm talking about the high 40s, the possibility is that they will form a coalition with a few smaller parties. The really interesting scenario comes in, Yeyes, is if the ANC falls below 45%, then it has two options. It could go the radical route by partnering with the economic freedom fighters, which is really pushing extremist policies like land expropriation and nationalizing the Reserve Bank, nationalizing private property in effect. Or the ANC could turn to the more centrist Democratic Alliance, second largest party to the ANC, but they do not agree on most issues. The Democratic Alliance is very business-friendly and very anti-union and very pro-privatization, which are all things that are anathema to the ANC.
Any word from the Zuma camp?
Nothing official from them. I do know for a fact that they are moaning about some alleged irregularities that have prevented some of their supporters from voting. It's very limited, their complaints. It's limited to a couple of polling stations, and that certainly doesn't seem to be a widespread problem at all.
And lastly, Darren, this is the seventh general election South Africa has held since the end of white minority rule 30 years ago. So when all is said and done, when do we get the results?
Probably Sunday at the latest, full rundown of the full results. And that's what's usually happened. South Africa's Independent Electoral Commission is pretty organized, pretty well resourced, and usually it turns out the results very soon. In fact, I think Friday we could start seeing definite trends that we can identify, and we can see the way things are going, and you can start making good calls as to who's going to win what and where, probably on Friday.
That's VOA reporter Darren Taylor speaking with my colleague Yehes Wihib from South Africa. Journalist Asma Botmi Clark has been speaking with voters in Durban today to get sense of the mood.
I hope that whoever wins has the political will to actually implement the things they promise people.
Dash Moodley says the community seems upbeat about the election.
People are quite happy to be voting. I think everyone wants something to change and they want to see a difference in the country.
Kami Haripasad, however, is worried about the election's unfairness.
You just worry about the corruption in this country with regards to rigging of votes and all of that stuff. And if everything is done correctly and done, fairly, we should get a positive outcome.
You can follow all the developments in South Africa's election in all our VOA Africa news programming and at voaafrica.com. And here in the United States, U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump both say America needs a strong military. Biden says the U.S. military is strong today. Trump says Biden has weakened a U.S. military that Trump says he rebuilt as president. VOA Scott Stans reports.
President Joe Biden told graduates of the U.S. Military Academy on Saturday that America has never asked its military to do so many different things in so many different places all at once.
Right now, American soldiers are supporting brave Ukrainians in their fight for freedom. Our soldiers are working around the clock to keep munitions and equipment moving by land, sea and air.
Those commitments include the Middle East.
The U.S. Air Force has conducted food drops, delivering tens of thousands of meals to the people of Gaza. In the face of Iran's recent unprecedented attack on Israel, we brought partners together, including Arab nations, to repel the sustained assault.
Donald Trump says Biden is leading America's military into a, quote, insanely dangerous situation.
Our country has been totally humiliated And we have a corrupt, compromised president, crooked Joe Biden, who is dragging us into World War III. And that's what's happening.
Trump says Biden should not be risking war with Russia or China. In a campaign video, he promised to put the U.S. military behind a foreign policy that puts America's interests first.
I will ask Europe to reimburse us for the cost of rebuilding the stockpiles sent to Ukraine, which they should be doing now. But Joe Biden is too weak and too disrespected to even ask.
Biden says America's military is strengthening alliances and investing in deterrence.
Defending our values by standing up to tyrants and safeguarding the peace by protecting freedom and openness. Thanks to the U.S. Armed Forces, we're doing what only America can do. As the indispensable nation, the world's only superpower, and the leading democracy in the world.
The U.S. Defense Department says Army, Navy, and Air Force recruitment in fiscal year 2023 missed targets by more than 40,000 recruits. Trump says that's because many people do not want to serve in the U.S. military because of what he called Biden's, quote, woke policies and political purges.
I will restore the proud culture and honor traditions of America's armed forces, and there will be no Marxism allowed, no communism allowed, and we'll get rid of the fascists.
The U.S. military says there are several reasons for dropping recruitment, including a stronger economy, which gives younger people more options, and a greater mistrust of institutions among those in Generation Z, born between 1997 and 2012. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you change or maintain your country's reputation?
First of all, change the positions of the police officers and even in the army, because it's not well organized. There's a lot of corruption in it.
I would like to encourage the people around the country to maintain the good behaviors in the country. And when it is bad, maybe I would encourage them to copy from other countries which are doing good outside.
Unity anyway, unity. Cooperation among the nationals. It can promote our country.
In talking about the peace in this country, it would make people be more interested.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
That's all we have been working on for you this Tuesday, Wednesday rather, May 29, 2024. We now leave you with Sam Mapangala and the song Nyama Choma. It's a famous delicacy in Kenya. Listening to Sam Mapangala and the song Nyama Choma. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Peter Heinrich, We wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.